Thank you so much, and my thanks to our co-hosts and to DJ Rob for helping us, our gratitude to you today. My name is Marty B, and I am your workshop leader for today. I'm a gratefully recovering compulsive overeater, and I come to you today, I want to make something really clear right from the beginning, and that is that I do not come to you today as a person who is an expert in body image. I come to you as a fellow struggler, as a fellow sufferer from time to time. And so I come to you having found a path forward to with the help of a few other people as well, a path to healing, really. So I'll start by sharing my story with you. And this is going to be our overview for today. I'll start by talking about my story. We'll talk about willingness and curiosity, surrender, some soft strategies, not any hard lessons, a little bit of patience, and some of helping others. So let me just talk to you about my story. I would say my problems with food started at a very early age in my home. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mom was a restrictor. When she got stressed, and there was a lot of stress in the home, when she got stressed, she restricted her food and did not eat at all. She felt sick to her stomach. She didn't feel well, and so she didn't eat. My father, who was the alcoholic, when he wasn't drinking, he was eating, and there was just so much dysfunction about food. And I started out at a very early age finding all kinds of compulsive, not just eating, but compulsive food behaviors. I'm also a childhood abuse survivor, both a sexual abuse survivor and a domestic violence survivor. So my home was, it was just a very difficult place to be. There was a lot of drinking and violence, and I would go myself even go to school with black eyes or split lips and that sort of thing. It was just a very difficult place to be. I want to say, as much as I talk about the difficulty, I want to also say that there were people in my life that did help to make my life different. And so I find a lot of gratitude in teachers that helped me, in family members that tried to help in their own way. And then over time, though, I grew into my own problems and dysfunction. So what are some of those problems? Well, I ate to change the way I felt. Just as much as my mom didn't eat when she would get stressed, when I was stressed or I was upset or I felt ashamed or I felt anxiety, I would eat to change the way I felt. And I would sneak food. And I actually earned money that I didn't tell my family about so that I could eat with food they didn't know about, because they constantly were controlling my food. It says here that I was always referred to as fat. I was put on my first diet at about 10 years old. And as a young teenager, because my dad, when he was sober, he was eating a lot. He would also go on some pretty significant hardcore diets, the most crazy of which was a 400 calorie a day liver or fish diet. So I was allowed to have, as I tell you about this, I feel a little traumatized just telling you about my, soy sauce soaked fish or soy sauce soaked liver, to eat those two things and up to 400 calories a day. So I was very confused. I thought of myself as fat. And so what did I really look like? I want to show you a picture of what I really looked like. So this is me. A normal sized human being. I also took care of, I was the oldest of four kids. This is my youngest sibling. And so you see he's eating some sort of chocolate and I'm probably sneaking some kind of chocolate. That's what I'm guessing. But if you look at me, I don't look fat. I look like a normal sized thing. So I bring that up in a session on body image to tell you that even as a teenager, I had a very odd perception of what my actual body image was. And so I felt like I was fat. I was treated like I was fat and I believed I was fat. But as I said a little while before, a little bit ago, I also developed some really difficult perceptions about myself and some difficult food behaviors. The one I carried into my OA experience was the idea of importing trash. And that would mean that if I were hungry and I wanted to eat something on my way home, I would stop by someplace and get something, but I didn't bring the trash home and put it in the trash in my house. I stuffed it under the seat of the car. And then I would wait until I found a trash can, like at a gas station or something, and I would export my trash to some other place. And so another thing that I did was I would use little strips of, if there was a cake, my mother cooked a lot there was a period of time that she didn't work and she cooked high calorie foods every single day. And so because I wasn't really allowed to eat the food, I would take a knife and make a tiny little strip. And so these are just some of the food behaviors that I adopted that were compulsive. So what I would also tell you is that I continued to gain weight. I really started gaining weight after I left home, and I continued to gain weight until about 6 years ago, I joined Overeaters Anonymous. And so I've told you what I used to be like. Let me tell you what happened. So the first time that I showed up at Overeaters Anonymous, somebody very kindly told me a few things that I should consider as a new person in OA. And one of those things was that it would be good for me to get a hold of a nutritionist. And I want to tell you a little bit about my response. So before joining OA, I believed pretty much that that I knew mostly about everything. My sponsor says that an addict is an egotist with an inferiority complex. And indeed, that was true of me. So when my fellow said you might consider getting a nutritionist, I said, oh, I don't need that because I've been dieting my whole life and I know everything there is to know about food. And that was kind of my egotism coming into program. But what I found that very first day is that this was a place where I belonged. I met my tribe. I met the people who could sincerely and with great care be to me what no one had really ever been to me before. Someone to lovingly and honestly be a mirror into my soul, who really understood what I was dealing with and what I was trying to process in my life. And as a result, I got a sponsor. I began to work on the steps. And I have to tell you that being part of an alcoholic family too, I had been in Alateen. It's not that the 12 steps or the traditions were unfamiliar to me, but you see, it was always someone else's fault when I walked in the door, when it was my mother's fault because she was an enabler, or it was my father's fault because he was an alcoholic. But I didn't take responsibility for my own compulsion or my own behavior or my own compulsive food habits. So that was something that really changed for me once I began to truly work the steps. And I thought that, I'll just tell you, this is the way I worked the steps. Step one, admitted that my life was unmanageable, right? Yeah, I'm done, check. Two, came to believe another power greater than myself could restore me to, that a power greater than myself could restore to sanity. Oh, good, check, I've done that. So literally it was that fast. So I'd never really gently and completely and with honesty worked the steps. And so being here and having a sponsor really made a difference in my life. I have now lost 70% of my excess body weight. And I, in addition, I am so grateful to say that I, as of December 4th, coming up in just about a month, I will celebrate 5 years of abstinence. So, I'm very grateful to have been part of this program, and I have friends that will be friends for life because of this program. I have fellows that I talk to about my program and who support me during difficult times, difficult moments. And so I'm so grateful for all that OA has brought to me. So let's talk about now, I'm going to move into the actual workshop part. And I want to talk about some of the things that has made a difference. I'll start out by saying that my body image was so bad that even married, I could not stand to be naked in front of myself, nor could I stand to be naked in front of my spouse. And so I really struggled with body image. And over time, I began to just slowly by talking to other people and hearing some of their stories, and then also doing a little bit of reading, because there really is a lot out there about body image. And combining that with my program, that's what you're getting from me today. Willingness and curiosity is how I started. I spent time with my higher power because I felt like something was really wrong with me, because if somebody asked me what my issue was, I would say, oh, I'm extremely modest. But it really wasn't that. It was that I was extremely ashamed. I was ashamed of how I felt inside my body. I was ashamed of how I let myself get to this state. And then as I began to release the weight, and I began to have saggy, baggy skin, I struggled with that as well. And so I began to spend time meditating and talking with my higher power and praying with my higher power for willingness to really look at myself as I really am, like really as I am today, with inside and out, to know who I am as a human being, to know who I am in my heart, to be able to be honest about the exterior, my body, you know, to talk, you know, my skin, my back, Well, some people call them bat wings. I call them grandma. I'm a grandma of 10. So it's like, yeah, I'm just doing it. This is just for fun. Anybody else who wants to join me on wiggling your bat wings, if you happen to have them, please feel free. Be bold. Anyway, so thank you for those who did that with me. So it was, I just decided that I had to become willing. And at first I wasn't willing. I had to become willing to be made willing by my higher power, because I wasn't. I was afraid. I was afraid of what looking at myself as I really am, inside and out, was going to mean for me. And one of the things I had to do was become willing to see beauty in my body, to be able to see beauty. And I'm getting older, so I have wrinkles. I have all kinds of things going on. But basically, to see beauty in the person that I have become, in a more whole human being, in a recovering body. And what about, you know, what does it mean to see beauty? It meant to be able to look at myself and say, and talk to myself about healthiness, being healthy, and which I didn't have before. And so to be able to see beauty in my first slightly smaller, and then a little bit more small, and then which I honestly, I couldn't even get my head around saying the word small. I'm getting smaller, because I just thought of myself as fat my whole life. You saw my photo that, and I thought of myself as fat. So at first I had to be willing just to be able to see beauty in what I have now. And it didn't, I started this process as I began to release the weight, because I knew I had a problem. And I also wanted to challenge social norms. So if we can be really honest about our culture sees beauty as only one type of body image. And that is, if we're honest about it, really a size zero, or, you know, the super buff male or the super buff size zero female. And those are our social norms, but it's not real. And the average person doesn't look like that. So part of my willingness had to help. I had to find a way to see beauty in myself, and also to challenge social norms. And not only did I feel fat, but I have to tell you that, and this still hurts my heart to say this, but I couldn't see beauty in me at all. I thought of myself, I didn't think of myself as pretty, didn't think of myself as attractive. I just had this fat image that extended to how I even looked at my face. People would say, and you know it happens, I bet if we did a poll right now, I bet, you know, 99% of you have had somebody say to you something along the lines of you've got such a pretty face, too bad you're so fat. And so I couldn't even get my head around I had a pretty face, because all I could hear was fat. So the willingness to challenge those social norms was a big part of the beginning. And then it was curiosity. How does my body serve me? How has my body cared for me? Even during the times that I was overweight, how did my body serve me? And so what do I mean by that? My body allowed me, I was still able to nourish myself. I was able to have, I didn't have a heart attack. My body, you know, there are different parts of us that struggle with different health problems over the course of our time. And I that's part of the, one of the ways that I deceived myself for so long, is because I didn't have any health problems and I had good blood pressure and that sort of thing. And then it was like no health problems. And then all of a sudden health problems. So I just thought, oh, I'm okay. I don't need to worry about my weight because I don't have the health problems. And then all of a sudden here they were. And so I began to think about and get curious about how my body took care of me, how my body, you know, I told you about living in a family of domestic violence and, you know, my body helped me run away or to fight back when my dad was beating me. My body allowed me to do sports, and not very well, mind you, but I did do it. And so there, I got curious about how my body has served me and the ways in which I could be grateful. And then I got curious, am I being unkind to myself by the way I'm talking about my body? And so I'm just going to kind of review this a little bit to get willing to get willing and willing to be curious. And so I'll talk some more about being kind in a bit. So let's talk about surrender. I've got this picture of this tree here because one of the ways that I have connected in my OA family is by thinking of myself as the tree with lots of roots, and my roots are all my fellows. And so my roots are my higher power. And so part of surrender for me was in quit. I had to also quit trying to do everything on my own. When I was growing up, being the oldest of four, I was responsible for all the children. And I didn't really get any support in the beginning. I didn't get too much support. And so one of the things I learned as a young teenager in Alateen was the importance of support. And so surrender first to my higher power. And then I had to let go of all the hurtful words and the maltreatment that I had suffered because I realized I had a lot of resentment, you know, especially when I did my fourth step, I learned that I had all this resentment. And so I had to surrender the hurtful words and maltreatment. And one of the strategies I had for doing that would be to write down the things that triggered me. Even yet, when I heard this kind of thing, even when it was being said to someone else or about someone else, and I wrote these things all down and I put them in a metal container. And outside I went and after I wrote these all down on pieces of paper, I set them on fire and I offered them sort of, I'm Native American. And so I offered them sort of as a smoke offering to the Great Spirit and, or my higher power. And then I was able to start surrendering those hurtful words, surrender the things that have been done to me. Not that I would forget them, but that I wouldn't hold on to them and let them be part of what continued to cause me pain in my body image. And I surrendered also the painful emotions that I had, the feelings of not ever being pretty or not being attractive or not being able to consider the word beautiful, something that I could not even aspire to, but not to ever think I could ever be that. And then also to replace lies with truth. And so when I would hear these things come up in my brain, you know, we talk to ourselves all the time. And sometimes there would be something come up that some tapes that would be from my painful past. One tape or lie that I would often say is, no matter what I do, it's never enough, never enough. And so it made it so that I couldn't really move forward with all of my program because I kept listening to these lies. And so I began to surrender by replacing lies with truth. So when I would hear myself say something like, no matter what I do, it's never enough. And I would replace the lies with the truth, which actually for me is, I am enough. And there are people who might think I'm not enough, and that's okay. But I am enough for me. And so I took those lies and replaced them with truth. And that was another level of surrender for me. And then it's about surrendering to the process. Surrendering, and for me, the process is, this doesn't, you know, this is not all gone away for me. This is not, I'm not like, ta-da, I'm the perfect body image. It's not like that. It's a process. And I love and I'm grateful for where I have gotten in the process. And for every step I move forward in the process, I am so grateful for that. And so part of surrendering is just letting go to the process. And if some other painful emotion comes up, I now have a way to deal with that. And I will tell you that one of my abstinences is to not eat. I choose to not eat to change the way I feel. And so one of the important things for my abstinence is dealing with my and surrendering my painful emotions. So when I have something come up for me, I lost my younger sister she completed suicide almost exactly 2 years ago. And when that grief would come up and all of the guilt I felt, which was misplaced, all the grief I felt about, you know, I coulda, shoulda, woulda, if I'd have done this, if I'd have done that, when I had those painful emotions, part of making sure that I kept on track with my program and my body image process was continuing to surrender those painful emotions. It's not a one-time thing. It's not a one-time thing for me. You know, if you've seen one body image issue, you've seen one body image. And I don't come to you today saying that what my process is will work for any or all of you, but just sharing with you what my process has been. So I just want to acknowledge that that I did not take this photograph, and I'm super grateful for Tim Green, who's allowed that to be used today. So let's talk about soft strategies. So I've talked to these a little bit about these during the course of what I'm talking about today, but I want to talk about gratitude. And so gratitude would be things like, I'm grateful for my bat wings or my grandma arms because they remind me of my grandma for one thing, and I adored her. So that's something I can be grateful for. Or I could say, I'm grateful for these because they remind me of my recovery, and that as I have continued to release weight, that I do have some excess skin, and I'm grateful for my program, and I'm grateful for the recovery that I have and that I continue to get. Let's talk also about visualization. And if you don't mind with me, if you would just take a moment, just like for 1 minute, I'm just asking for 1 minute, and turn off your video just for a moment. And I'm going to ask you to do a brief visualization with me. And it's just going to be one single moment. As you just take a moment. Just breathe for a moment in through your nose and out through your mouth. Feeling yourself connected to the earth, your feet, if it's comfortable for you, being flat on the floor. Just visualizing yourself, visualizing you being healthy, visualizing yourself being strong, visualizing yourself being at peace. Take a couple of other breaths. Not that anything that I would tell you how to do it, but whatever way helps you to breathe most comfortably and most fully and most at peace. One last breath, please. And when you're ready, please put your visual back on. So when I feel anxious or upset about something, when I feel frustrated, when I feel lonely, when I feel bored, I have to tell you that for me, I know that some people eat when they celebrate. That isn't my thing. I tend to eat and want to eat compulsively when I have negative feelings. That's what my particular compulsion looks like. And so when I feel all the negative things that human beings feel, that are absolutely normal to feel, that help us to know when something isn't right in our world, I might take a moment and be grateful for that, to be grateful for that feeling and to visualize myself in a peaceful place. And that is so very helpful to me. So the next thing is humor. And you see to the right here, a fertility goddess. And so sometimes I will look at myself, I actually do look at myself naked in the mirror now. Before I couldn't even stand to look at myself and I barely was able to get in the shower. But now I look at myself in the mirror and I think, oh my gosh, I look just like a fertility goddess. And I have fun with that. And I rejoice that I'm not alone, that there are these beautiful images all over the world that show what I kind of look like or what I used to look like. What I kind of look like is that I'm sorry if this offends anyone, but I have saggy breasts and I have skin hanging down from my belly. And I'm okay with that. But when I look at the fertility goddess, I laugh and it gives me joy. And I use different ways of having fun and being joyful with my body and really being grateful for what my body looks like now. And that is a process. It's not something that happens overnight. And it's something that I continue to have to do that. Like I continue personally, I have to continue to wake up and I have to turn my will and my life over to the care of God every day as I understand him. And so as I'm doing that, I allow myself to just have a sense of humor about my body, to also be grateful for everything my body does for me. It pumps my blood up to my brain and it gives me the ability to think. It nourishes my feet and my hands, which gives me ability to walk and to do things for myself. And so I just try to do all these things, gratitude, visualization, and humor. And then the other thing I want to tell you is that it's important to connect. it's important to connect with other fellows and to be able to talk to people, you know, your sponsor and your sponsees. A lot of us have problems with body image. So if we're able to be honest with ourselves about who we are and what struggles we have, and connect with others and our fellows about what is going on with them with regard to their body image, then it also helps us to feel like we're not alone. And that's the one of the best things about our program, is that we're not alone. We're not alone in our program. We're not alone in our body image struggles. We're not alone. And then also practice. We don't become skillful. I don't become skillful at getting better about my body image without practicing these strategies, without being willing to be made willing, without being willing to be curious, without willingness to surrender. And these practices of gratitude and visualization and being willing to have a sense of humor about it and being willing to connect with others. Practice is something that is something that I, it's important, just like a 10th step. It's important for me to do this work every day. So in conclusion, be kind to yourself and be patient. And remember, it's a process. It's a process, and you are not alone.